You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
First off, I don't know a lot of scholars who would go to the mat to claim that this was actually an historical episode in Jesus' life. It's like other miracle stories. It's a parable about the parable teller, meant to make a point. Or perhaps it was crafted as a counter story to the fame of Apollonius of Tyana. He was regarded as the master of storms, of fire, and of perils of all kinds. And he was a contemporary of Jesus. In the rough and tumble real world of the first century God-man, Apollonius would have been one of Jesus' primary competitors in the marketplace of religious ideas. In fact, some scholars think that if things would have gone a little differently, we might all be Apollinarians rather than Christians. So, Jesus needed to be on the same level with not only Apollonius, but with Zeus and Poseidon to boot. And since water was the symbol of chaos in the Hebrew culture, all the better. Jesus had been teaching the crowd for hours. He was exhausted. The text says he taught as long as they were able to hear him. Then enough is enough. Instruction time was through, and Jesus was drained. Rather abruptly, he turns to his disciples and says, "We're out of here." So he and the disciples got into the boat and got away from it all.
Our words of wisdom are selections from Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41, the voice version.
The same evening, Jesus suggested they cross over to the other side of the lake. With Jesus already in the boat, they left the crowd behind and set sail along with a few other boats that followed. As they sailed, a storm formed. The winds whipped up huge waves that broke over the bow, filling the boat with so much water that even the experienced sailors among them were sure they were going to sink. Jesus was back in the stern of the boat, sound asleep on a cushion, when the disciples shook him awake.
"Jesus, Master, don't you care that we're going to die?"
He got up, shouted words into the wind, and commanded the waves.
"That's enough. Be still."
And immediately the wind died down to nothing. The waves stopped.
"How can you be so afraid? After all you've seen, where is your faith?"
The disciples were still afraid, slowly coming to grips with what they had seen.
"Who is this Jesus? How can it be that he has the power over even the wind and the waves?"
"Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church."
Thanks be to God.
One lovely day, Mullah Nasruddin and one of his friends rented a boat and went fishing. In a remote part of the lake, they found a spot where the fish were really biting. "We'd better mark this spot so we can come back tomorrow," said the mullah. "Okay, I'll do it," replied his friend. When they got back to the dock, the mullah asked, "Did you mark that spot?" "Sure," said his friend. "I put a chalk mark on the side of the boat."
"You nitwit," said Nasruddin. "How do you know we'll get the same boat tomorrow?"
Nasruddin may seem hopeless, but over and over again, the disciples show what lunkheads they are and totally inept at even the one thing they're supposed to be good at, fishing. For those of us that were on the Sea of Galilee a few years ago it's hard not to be a little gobsmacked over how small the Sea of Galilee actually is, and how tiny the slice of shoreline is where all the action takes place. Once you see the geography, it becomes even more clear how this is not about some literal storm at sea. It's a parable about self-sufficiency. People who think it's a story about Jesus' power over the waves not only open themselves up to the inevitable comeback of, okay then, where's that same power to avert destructive hurricanes and tornadoes today? They're totally missing Jesus' point. People know what it's like to be in the midst of storms. People know what it's like to have no control. People know situations where the sense is that only the divine can intervene. Realistically, people also know that no matter how much we cry out, it's not like waving a magic wand. Crises don't instantly resolve themselves. It takes work, patience, strength of will, and time. And it still often doesn't work out the way we'd hoped. Maybe you've seen that office sign. If you can keep your head when everyone else is losing theirs, then you don't fully grasp the situation. Did Jesus just not grasp the situation? No. I think he was perfectly aware of the situation. He'd spent all day teaching and was totally beat. He was going to get some well-deserved rest. He was on the boat, lulled to sleep. What could possibly go wrong? He was on a fishing boat with experienced professional fishermen. What's to worry about? Well, number one, the disciples. Typically, these guys are totally pompous and self-congratulatory. Hey, we're with Jesus. We've got it covered. Right before they prove once again that they just don't get it. According to Rex Hunt, the disciples had developed an unhealthy dependency on Jesus. Now, normally you might think that dependency on Jesus is a good thing, but not here. Walter Wink is another author who alludes to an unhealthy dependency on Jesus. They awoke Jesus with reproaches. They also lacked faith in themselves. You deal with the storm, Jesus. Jesus could have said, "You're the sailors. Give me a break." But like an impatient parent, Jesus is exasperated and just takes care of it. You know the drill. You can get your kid to do it, but sometimes it's just easier to do it yourself and get back to your nap. The disciples had the resources. They had the skills and failed to use them. Jesus isn't in miracle worker mode here. He's in exasperated parent who hasn't had enough sleep mode. Seriously, are you kidding me right now? And seeing that it's Mother's Day, I think it's only fair to acknowledge this tone as one my mother perfected into an art form. I don't know about yours. This is not a story for us to just sit back and say, "Whoa, isn't that Jesus something?" It's a story challenging the hearers to not be terrified of life, to claim one's resources, and do what you do. The disciples are surprised by a sudden and wild storm on the Sea of Galilee. And despite all their skills, their know-how, and the collective life experience of their companions, they allowed the storm outside to come inside, frantic, disconnected, and out of control. So they wake up a peaceful, sleeping Jesus. And what does he say? "Really? Seriously, what is it with you guys? How can you be so afraid? After all you've seen, where is your faith? This story is not advocating just trust in Jesus to snap his fingers and make everything all right. It's about not allowing the storm around us to become a part of us. Read it again. The only reason Jesus calms the storm is because he's tired and wants some peace himself. Yet even after Jesus essentially asks, "What is wrong with you numbskulls?" Of course, they totally miss the point and wonder out loud, "Wow, who is this Jesus?" They totally miss that Jesus has just asked, "Where is your faith?" Remember, the Greek word for faith is pistis, and it is not a noun. It's a verb. You can't have it. You can only demonstrate it. If it were translated into English in a way that reflects what Jesus actually asked, it would have Jesus ask, "Where is your faithing?" Pistis is trust, confidence, and in the midst of the storm, not losing track of one, who you are, and two, the fact that you're surrounded by people who make their living in tiny boats out on the water. Why are you bugging Jesus? Dr. Rachel Rahman is a therapist who helps people deal with traumatic health issues. One day, a man came into her practice following radical treatment for bone cancer. In order to save his life, his leg had been removed at the hip. As he was only 24 years old, he was full of anger and bitterness. He harbored a deep hatred of well people. After all, it was so unfair for him to have to suffer such a terrible loss so early in life. Dr. Rahman worked with him through talk therapy and art therapy, and after about 2 years, he started to experience a profound shift. He started to visit other people who had also suffered profound losses and would tell Dr. Rahman about their encounters. On one occasion, he visited a young woman about his age who was a gifted singer, but after having just had a double mastectomy, was so depressed that she wouldn't even look at visitors. In fact, she was so distraught, she could barely speak. On the day the young man visited her, the nurses were trying to cheer her up by cranking a playlist of the young woman's favorite music through the room's speakers. Desperate to get her attention, the young man proceeded to unstrap his prosthetic leg, set it aside, and then began dancing around the room on one leg, awkwardly snapping his fingers to the music. The young woman looked up in amazement. He looked so utterly ridiculous that she couldn't help but burst out laughing. Through her tears of laughter, she said, "Man, if you can dance, then I can sing," and started singing along. Eventually, the young man had made enough progress that Dr. Rahman sat down with him to do a kind of exit interview. Going through his file, she pulled out several drawings he had done early on. One of them was a drawing he'd done after Dr. Rahman had suggested drawing a representation of his body. He had drawn a picture of a vase, but running through it was a deep black crack, clearly drawn from having ground a black crayon into the paper over and over again. An expression of his belief that this vase couldn't hold water and could never again function as it was intended. But now, He took the drawing from Dr. Rahman and said, "Hang on, this one isn't finished yet." He grabbed the box of crayons on her desk, picked out the brightest yellow crayon he could find, and started scribbling bold yellow streaks emanating from the black crack. He handed it back and said, "Who knew? The place where it's broken is right where the light comes through." And of course, Leonard Cohen gets right to the same point in his song Anthem. "Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." We need to stop fretting about the storm. Stop looking to someone else to make it right. And stop overlooking our capabilities because we feel somehow inadequate. More often than not, where we are most authentically ourselves, cracks and all, is exactly where the light gets in and where it comes through. Years ago, my friend Joan Farr told me this story. Once upon a time, there was a poor elderly woman who had to go to a well every day to carry water. She had two large jugs that hung on the ends of a pole she carried across her neck and shoulders, but one of the jugs was cracked. Naturally, by the time she got back to the house each day, the cracked jug was only half full. Eventually, the cracked jug became discouraged because it was not able to deliver a full measure of water. It complained to the woman because it was ashamed of its imperfection and inability to do only half of what it had been made to do. But the woman told the jug that she was well aware of what the jug considered to be a flaw. That's why she always carried that jug on the same side. She had planted flowers on that side of the path, and every day as she walked home, the leaky jug watered them. What the jug obsessed about as some kind of personal flaw was really a means to a beautiful outcome. And I don't know about you, but as we think about those in our lives who've filled that role of mother for us in one way or another, not the curated, idealized version, but the real people, we know the cracks are real. And yet, somehow, along the path behind them, things keep growing. All of us are called upon to respond to hardship, sorrow, and loss. Along the way, each of us will be profoundly touched by pain and conflict that is an inevitable part of being human. Our capacity to respond with grace and courage is directly proportional to our ability to not let the storm outside take over the inside, to be who we are. And remember that we're surrounded by capable, experienced companions who are literally in the same boat with us. Friends, life is too short to let the storms overwhelm us. If we're honest about who we are, and if we're able to see our companions and loved ones as the works in progress that we all are, we can cherish our cracks and imperfections as the gifts we didn't ask for. In the end, the chips, dents, and scratches are the very means that make genuine community possible, curating hope and creating the kind of uncommon beauty we otherwise could have never imagined. As it turns out, God has never had much use for flawless containers. Be well.
Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.